And welcome to City Visions. I'm tonight's guest host, Chris Hambrick. California adopted the Common Core standards in 2010, and last spring, the first tests were administered under the new regime. The results are in, and there is much room for improvement. In language arts, fewer than half of students who took the tests met standards for proficiency in their grade level. And for math, only one-third met grade level standards. But perhaps more disturbing than these results was the glaring achievement gap that emerged. African American and Latino students performed far worse than their white and Asian peers. And preliminary results indicate that schools with the majority of students from lower-income households also struggled. What do these scores tell us about the implementation of Common Core in California? How will teachers and administrators address the disappointing results and troubling achievement gap? Joining me now in the studio to talk about these issues and more are Richard Carranza, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District. Welcome, Superintendent Carranza.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Also, I have Kim Towsley, currently a fourth grade teacher at Argonne Elementary School in San Francisco. Kim has 26 years of teaching experience in both public and private schools. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks, Chris.
And on the phone, we have Deborah Brown, Director of Education Policy at Children Now, a nonpartisan research, policy development, and advocacy organization dedicated to improving children's overall well-being. Welcome, Deborah.
Good evening. Thank you.
And we invite you, our listeners, to join in our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So now to our guest. So before we talk about the recent test results, Superintendent, can you give a broad overview of what Common Core is?
Sure. So I think at the most basic level, what our public should understand is that what's taught in the schools is called the curriculum. That's what is taught. What is taught as part of the curriculum is based on what the standards are that the state identifies as critical knowledge that all students should know at a particular grade level. So the Common Core state standards are really a series of knowledge nuggets, if you will, that all students should be able to know and be able to demonstrate proficiency in. They're called the Common Core state standards because governors from across all 50 states got together and said, yes, we need to raise the level of rigor in terms of what is being taught in our schools. And there are certain things that we can all agree all of our students should be able to know and do. That hence the name Common Core. In California, what that has happened is that our state standards have then become the Common Core state standards for California. There are certain things that we've included in our Common Core state standards in California that perhaps you wouldn't find in another state, but that's because local control, we have certain things we want to make sure that our students know in California as well. What we've done in San Francisco Unified is taken the Common Core state standards, and in San Francisco, we've actually empowered our teachers and treated our teachers as the professionals they are to take the Common Core state standards and completely revamp our San Francisco Unified School District curriculum. So the curriculum that is being taught is teacher developed. It's been teacher tested. It continues to be teacher tested and iterated in the classroom. But it's our curriculum based on the Common Core state standards for California.
Okay, great. Thank you. So California was one of 43 states that adopted the Common Core standards voluntarily. Deborah, your organization is an advocate for children. Can you tell us your view of Common Core standards and whether you think it was a good move for California to adopt them?
So, yes, I mean, we think it was really good for California to adopt the standards because we think, as opposed to the old standards, which really, while good, solid standards, really emphasize memorization and sort of rote memorization on it. And so with the Common Core, we do see that it really does focus on building greater understanding of concepts, also promoting critical thinking and active problem-solving skills. So we see that they're actually better tools and better prepare kids for college and career. It's those skills that they really need after they get out of school, and it does so in a way that really does help kids learn the standards.
So Given your organization's view, what has been the main focus of your work around Common Core?
So really what we've been fortunately, I should back up and say, fortunately in California, we do have strong support for the standards from the state level at the State Board of Education, strong support in the legislature, and then wonderful support from local educators like Superintendent Carranza, which is wonderful. So what we've been focused on for our organization is really making sure, one, that the benefits and the advantages of Common Core and the assessments stay in the forefront of the conversation at the policy level, so with the State Board and with the legislature. But then also we've really been trying to raise awareness at the public level. And so because there's really no controversy in California around the standards, they're not a significant controversy is happening in other states, we have found that there's not a full understanding of what the standards are and how they differ from curriculum. And so we've been really working to try to let folks know about Common Core, what the standards are, and also helping parents understand the standards and how they're different and what they mean for their kids, and also how the aligned assessments and how, in particular, how those are different and better than previous standards. Previous tests, excuse me. So we've really been focused on trying to build awareness for Common Core in the assessment.
And have you faced any challenges in raising this awareness, getting the message out?
So I think probably the challenge that we faced is really been sort of the noise that has been happening at the national level around the standards, because much of it doesn't apply to California in terms of things that California has done differently than other states, where we've changes that we've made to the standards, as well as again that general support at the policymaker level, funding that we've provided for the Common Core, and how we've really looked at our accountability system in relationship to the new assessments. And so the challenge has been trying to show how California really is unique in this space, and how we're really implementing and working to implement the standards in a very deliberate and thoughtful way, which I think is been hard to convey.
Thank you. So, Superintendent, can you describe the implementation of Common Core in the San Francisco Unified School District?
Sure. So, I think Kim will be able to talk a little more as well, because she was part of one of those pioneering teacher groups that came together and really took on writing the SFUSD curriculum. But what we did is we took very deliberately from the beginning an approach that valued our teachers as the professionals that they are. So instead of hiring consultants to come in and do a top-down implementation where everybody gets trained and everybody gets taken through and then you're told what to teach and how to teach it and when to teach it, what we did is we took a different approach. We took a classroom-up approach, and we brought together teachers from across the district, both in math and English language arts, that actually we paid time for them to come together, a lot of time in the summer, sometimes during the school year as well. And they took all of the different spirals and all of the different grade level configurations of the Common Core, and then took that information to start writing the curriculum for the district. And we did this back in 2010 is when we started the initial work with this. And what happened was that over the course of the last few years, more and more teachers now have had a hand in writing the curriculum. But what has happened is that the curriculum has been iterative in nature. It continues to develop. And as we learn things that are working well, we continue to implement those and integrate them into the curriculum. And quite frankly, there's been things that haven't worked so well, which has been good because it's been teacher tested. So our approach has really been from the classroom up. And, you know, what I'm so proud of is the fact that we have so many teachers in San Francisco that have a hand in the writing of the curriculum, that if we in San Francisco were to say tomorrow, we're going to move away from the Common Core, I think we'd have a revolt in the classrooms, because our teachers say, no, you're not. This is actually much deeper learning for our students. It requires us as professionals to continue to grow in our profession, but it really is better for our students. And it's tougher, it's more rigorous, but it's better preparing our students for college, career, and life. So that's really been our approach in San Francisco.
Okay. So Were there specific kinds of support that were given to teachers before being asked to implement the new standards?
Sure. So obviously you have to know what they are. So unpacking the standards was a critical component of that. I think the most critical aspect, and I'd love to get Kim's take on this as well, but one of the most critical aspects of any implementation, especially of a curriculum, is time. You need to give professionals time to come together, to work together, to kind of try it out, figure it out, see what works and what doesn't work. And then, quite frankly, because we all are emerging from, and this is a total personal perspective here, the dark ages of No Child Left Behind, right, where the curriculum was restricted. It was restricted just to English, language, arts, and math, and you get a score, and you're either a failing school or you're making adequate yearly progress. As we're emerging from that time period, then all of us need to kind of wrap our head around, okay, what is it that is important for students to know? And how will we know that students know what we think is important? And instead of being able to bubble a sheet to demonstrate their knowledge, how do we have multiple ways for students to be able to demonstrate their knowledge that we give them credit for, and yet we're able then to give them a grade for? Right. So it's really a changing of the whole paradigm of how we teach and how we learn and then how we celebrate learning. That takes time, and it takes opportunities for professionals to come together to kind of suss that out as they go forward.
So, Kim, what sort of training were you given in order to implement this? Actually, Superintendent said that you helped kind of create this new curriculum. What's your view of the things that were necessary to include at the local level?
Necessary to include within the curriculum?
Within the curriculum.
Well, we actually started by looking at the standards, and we have always been encouraged, and we keep encouraging our colleagues to keep going back to those standards. It's easy to get caught up in teaching curriculum and not understand what's behind it. And it's particularly important when curriculum is being written and rewritten and revised constantly that you understand actually what's behind that, because that informs your decisions then in the classroom. So that was the first thing, and probably one of the most important things is really teachers having a chance to be able to talk with each other, to wrestle with what does this really look like? What does this look like for this standard at this grade? How would we know that? What would we look for in a child to be able to do that? So then when we started writing curriculum, and we actually were able to pull curriculum from some different states who had already kind of gotten a head start on some of the things we were doing. So we were able to kind of piecemeal some things together and then write some things. And as Superintendent Carranza said, we've had several iterations and it's continuing to be revised. Seems like several times a week there's something new that's coming out in a helpful way. You know, we're finding mistakes. One of the very cool things, actually, is that a lot of our students are finding some of the mistakes. We will put something out, it was a typo or something, and the kids will actually find a lot of that, which is fabulous to be able to talk with kids and send that stuff back. It tells me the kids are really gaining that kind of in-depth knowledge that they can challenge. And instead of just looking at something and going, well, it must be right, they can actually challenge that mathematically or linguistically.
So your view of the standards, adopting the Common Core, you think that was a good move for California?
I think it was a very good move for California. I would agree with Superintendent Carranza that we had become much more of a memorization and rote type of a system. Good math, good reading, good writing has been around, well, since education has been around, but it's been in pockets. It's been a teacher here or a group of teachers there, perhaps a school, sometimes even a district, but not district-wide, not statewide, not nationwide. We want all of our kids to have an opportunity to have rigorous, exciting, imaginative, innovative curriculum that they can wrestle with, that they really have to struggle with and come out on the other side as thinkers and innovators and writers and readers, mathematicians, scientists. So, yeah, it's not been an altogether easy transition. I think we're still very much in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's really what's best for our kids. And it's been fun to watch some of my colleagues who have begun to really embrace that as they've watched their kids be able to do things that they weren't even sure quite how to teach.
Can you give me an example of maybe what the differences are?
Between some of the old standards and the new standards? So one of the things is the standards have gotten moved around. So there's less to teach in each grade, but you go much deeper. So in the past, we've had this sort of you spin around on 20 topics pretty much every year and hope the idea was each year it got deeper, but it really didn't. It was still kind of spinning at the same rate. The idea is to take less topics and go deeper with them so they don't have to be repeated in future years. So what that requires is you have to really dig down deep to understand that kind of stuff. An example, from math. In the past, third graders have done some area and perimeter. It's revisited in fourth grade with area and perimeter. But it's still mostly them kind of learning a formula. Length times width equals area. You know, they kind of learn that. We've gotten, with the standards, you're able to get a more in-depth idea of what to do, where they have to solve for unknowns in fourth grade. They start to understand some geometric understandings of, for example, your perimeter shrinks as you get closer to a square. They're actually being able to put things together that will help them when they get to geometry in high school. They're already putting those things together now in fourth grade. That's the kind of thing that the standards are different.
Chris, can I just add one thing to what Kim just said? Because she is so articulate about this, and I want to make sure that this is not lost in that. You know, prior to the Common Core State Standards, you've always had pockets of excellence in teaching, where teachers have been doing this kind of teaching for deeper learning, deeper meaning. What the Common Core State Standards promises us is true equity for all of our students, so that it shouldn't be in some pockets that students get this kind of learning and this kind of philosophy of learning, but that truly all of us across the nation, all students, regardless of where they live, regardless of what zip code they come from or what the color of their skin is, all students have this kind of a public school education that is deep, it's rich, and it's preparing them for life. And I think, you know, if you look at Japan, for example, and you look at how they teach math, you compare an algebra textbook in the United States and you compare a textbook from Japan, it's about one quarter the size. The textbook in Japan is about one quarter the size of what we have in the United States. Well, why is that? Because they do exactly what Kim has just described. They have less topics, but they go much deeper so that students are not only able to solve problems, but students are able to work through the problems and describe their thinking. And somebody once described for me the change in the Common Core math instruction akin to if you were using the same way of teaching vocabulary or English. The way we were teaching math was we were only doing the grammar. So our kids were really good about conjugating verbs, but yet couldn't put those verbs in a sentence to create a beautiful poem, right? What we're doing now is we're teaching kids that, yep, you have to know how to conjugate the verb, but you have to be able to put that in a sentence, and you have to be able to put that in a structure to create the poem. The conjugation isn't the point. The poem is the point. And that's really what the Common Core is trying to do.
So let's talk a little bit about the test results. Superintendent, can you describe the new tests that were administered to students last spring?
Sure. So the assessment and just a couple of things, I'm going to very respectfully disagree a little bit with kind of the characterization of how we did in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. None of us are jumping for joy. But what I do want to make sure people understand is that this was a benchmark year. And people want to, and our parents are going to want to go out and compare. How did my students do this year as opposed to how did they do this the last year? You cannot compare them. It's been 3 years since you had assessments. And those assessments were based on a totally different set of standards. So there is no comparison. This is the first shot out of the gate with the Common Core. With that being said, San Francisco Unified, even though we're not satisfied, we way outperformed the state of California. And actually, in English language arts, 52% of our students were either proficient or exceeded the standards, as compared to 44% of the state. In math, overall, we were 48% proficient or exceeded the proficiency, as compared to 34% in the state. Now, what is important to understand and what we all are focused on is that the achievement gaps or the opportunity gaps that were present with the old standards persist with this benchmark results of the new standards. We still see those achievement gaps. We still see them really persisting. So for us, you know, what was really important about how these tests were administered is that they were aligned to the Common Core State Standards. Students were asked to not only problem solve, but to solve problems, think critically, and write analytically. And we're not talking just about high school students. We're talking about an elementary school. They have to analytically analyze and write and explain their answers. These tests were no longer focused on just getting one right answer, but their students are being asked to consider different possibilities, all with shades of correctness, and then make an argument as to which one they think is the most correct. And the other thing I think that was significant is that these were all based, were computer-based exams. So students not only had to know the subject matter, they had to be able to think critically and put their words and their thoughts at the forefront, but they also had to be able to navigate technology while demonstrating their knowledge. So part of what we're also looking at really critically is how much did that requirement of them being able to navigate the technology contribute to some of the students that didn't do so well in these assessments.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight, we're discussing the recent test results under Common Core with Richard Carranza, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, Kim Towsley, a fourth grade teacher at Argonne Elementary School in San Francisco, and on the phone we have Deborah Brown, director of education policy at Children Now. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you're a parent, do you have any concerns about how Common Core is being implemented or with your child's test scores? If you're a teacher, how has your teaching changed as a result of Common Core, and do you believe that the test results will improve over time? Do you think school districts should be concerned with the low test scores? And if so, what do you think they should do to address them? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4131. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So we've got Kevin on line one.
Yeah, hi. I was dismayed to hear you mention Japan. Japan is a homogeneous country. And in fact, if you're not Japanese, you can't even be a citizen. How in the heck can you compare that to the United States? Hispanic and African American dropout rates are unbelievably high in some California town whose name escapes me, is as high as 50% of teenagers aren't attending school. So how can you play cheerleader to the Common Core and ignore the ludicrously high dropout rates, and how is getting tough on these students going to help them graduate or keep them in school even?
Thank you, Ken. Superintendent, do you want to respond?
Well, yeah, you just have to listen to anybody talking about educational policy, and we're going to be compared to Finland, we're going to be compared to Japan, we're going to be compared to Germany. So we're being compared to, you know, countries across the globe. So everybody's talking about how everyone's doing. What no one ever talks about, though, is what is the equity of access for all of our students. And I think that's been the secret shame in terms of the standards that we've held everyone up to and we've held ourselves to. So the challenges with students attending school notwithstanding, I'm sure the caller's not suggesting that African-American students and Latino students, we shouldn't have high standards. And then as an educational community, as a nation, strive to provide the best instruction and the best educational environment to make sure they meet the bar that we've set. I'm sure he's not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if we truly believe in America and we believe in a democracy, the cornerstone of a democracy is a well-educated populace. So if they are part of our America, and they are, we're the great melting pot, then we have a duty, we have a right to make sure that we have standards that are competitive in a global economy, in a global world, and we have the duty and the right in terms of free and public education to make sure that all of our students are being addressed and served from an equity perspective.
Office, you're a bullshit.
So we've got Ruth Ann.
Oh, hi there. I also am not in favor of Common Core. I think it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy for failure for people to not pass the test if they are disabled or special needs or English is not their primary language. It's setting the bar so high that I think it's set up so that these folks will necessarily fail. And Diane Ravitch has written extensively on this.
Thank you, Ruth Ann. Kim, have you seen kids struggling in the classroom? Like, what sort of struggles have you seen kids face with the new?
I think one of the struggles has been that I teach fourth grade, so within their career as a student, they've kind of shifted math. So where they started, they were sort of kind of learning things in a different approach than we've been doing in the last couple of years. So teaching them how to problem solve, how to take things apart, instead of relying on sort of rules and tricks and this word always means do this, but to actually like take things apart in language art, to be able to read something critically, to actually look for text evidence. These are all new skills, and they're high-demand skills for kids. So it is tricky. With our ELs and our special ed kids, we try to give them a lot of extra support.
ELs, English learners?
Sorry, yes,
okay.
English learners.
Okay.
And our special ed kids. We have our special ed teachers working alongside of us in classrooms, also trying to help break things down to something that is understandable and manageable. With our English language learners, we're building background knowledge, we're building vocabulary. But as Superintendent Carranza said, we want the same rigor for all of our students. It's a matter of finding what support systems we need to put in place so they can all succeed. The testing is sort of a different issue, but if you're looking at the classroom and the kind of things that we want to go on, we really want as educators to believe, and we do believe, that all children can learn, all children can learn well. It's a matter of finding how to do that, getting enough support, enough resources, so that they can succeed.
Okay, so earlier we were getting a little bit into talking about what was different about the new test. Can you, Kim, give me an example of how it's different? Because I've heard that they're adaptive.
They are adaptive, which I explained to my kids. They thought that was interesting. They are adaptive, so they change depending on how the students are answering. So that is put in place to help kids who are struggling with different things so they don't just keep looking at a test question that's just completely beyond them, you know, 10, 20, 30 questions. One of the big changes is that it is on a computer now, and that has been a challenge for the teachers and for the students. A lot of it is keyboarding, which our students, especially in elementary school, do not have the technology yet, the training to do. And the technology, at least this past spring, was a little complicated. It was new. The district was attempting to help us put it into place, but there were a lot of problems with it, a lot of things that didn't work well, and so that was a challenge both for teachers and for children.
So we've got Ryan. Do you have a comment or question for our guest, Ryan? Welcome.
Yeah, I've been listening to your program, and I would say that you know, my impression is that it's a fine program. The core is fine. It's rigorous. I'm glad to hear that. But I have two children who are one in middle school and one in elementary school. And, you know, I'm not sending them there for, you know, for a research and development project. I'm sending them there for their education. And last year and this year, they told me that their teachers are kind of confused as to what they're supposed to be teaching. I've asked the teachers personally, what guidance are you? Where are the textbooks? There are no textbooks. My daughter came home the other night. She had a math problem, and I needed to refer to her textbook, and she said, well, we don't have a textbook. So I love this idea that we're doing this from the ground up, but what and we're being rigorous, but what I don't like is that the kids, my kids' education career is being subjected to, you know, research and development during production during research and development, and they're not getting the education, and it's hurting them.
Thank you, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Superintendent, have you heard from schools feedback about how implementation is going?
Yeah, so we have, I think, a very open communication line with our school sites, and again, we have this vast cadre of teachers that are actually continuing to work and iterate on the curriculum for our district. There actually are textbooks that are in classrooms, but what was the previous paradigm was that a teacher, and Kim and I were just talking about this before we went on air, that, you know, we're about the same cohort in terms of when we went through our teacher credentialing programs. And the Common Core is much closer to the way we were taught to teach than perhaps some of our colleagues that just recently had gone through their credentialing program. Because their experience in this No Child Left Behind era was that you get a textbook, you start on chapter one, you go through chapter one, you answer the odd questions at the end of the chapter, then you go to chapter two. And then you go to chapter three, and your goal was to finish the book by the end of the year. Well, you weren't really teaching, and kids weren't really learning. Kids were learning how to do tricks to be able to answer answers. What we're doing now is actually authentically assessing what do students know and what do they not know. And then we're looping back and making sure that we're catching up students that haven't mastered it yet. And we're continuing to accelerate students that already captured it. Now, think about that. That is a true craft. That is a profession. That is what teachers do every single day now. Like the caller, I also have kids in San Francisco's public schools. One, my daughter just graduated. I have another daughter that's in the public schools. So I get the fear about we're experimenting on our kids. The difference is that kids in America's public schools have been experimented on for decades, and parents haven't known it. And what we're being is very upfront about the fact that we're raising the bar in terms of what students need to be able to know and do, not because we want to experiment on students, but because our students are competing for spots in the UCs and in the private universities with kids from around the world. And if everybody thinks about how hard it is for even our California students now to get a spot in a university, you're understanding that they're competing with kids from around not just next state over, from around the world. So we need to be more rigorous in terms of what we're expecting our kids to be able to do. That is called continuous improvement and continuous development. I'll tell you, Kim and her colleagues and myself and the Board of Education, none of us get up any day and say, we're going to hurt kids today. That's not what we're in this for. What we're doing is really basing this on the best research that's available about how students learn, how the brain develops, and then looking at what is the knowledge base that has to be taught and that students have to master to be competitive in a global economy.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight, we're discussing the recent test results under Common Core with Richard Carranza, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, Kim Towsley, a fourth grade teacher at Argonne Elementary School in San Francisco, and on the phone, we have Deborah Brown, director of education policy at Children Now. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you're a parent, do you have any concerns about how Common Core is being implemented or with your child's test scores? If you're a teacher, how has your teaching changed as a result of Common Core? And do you believe that the test results will improve over time? Do you think school districts should be concerned with the low test scores? And if so, what do you think they should do to address them? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. Deborah, California seems to have fared worse than other states which implemented Common Core at the same time, like Oregon and Connecticut. Do you have any insight as to why that might be?
Compared on the test scores, the test results?
Yes.
I don't know that at least right now we can really compare. I think that there is a difference not only in terms of our student populations, but and also in terms of the tests. So in California, we administer tests to the kids that had performance items. So items that really had kids dive deeper into concepts. So have one sort of problem that they answered, you know, in multiple ways, and not all states administered that portion of the test. So I think there's different. You have to sort of compare. It's not quite an apples to apples comparison on the test score. So I think there's just a variety of factors that we have to look at. You know, just have to be mindful of in making comparisons.
So are you reaching out to parents to educate them about why scores are lower than under the previous tests and kind of what the challenges are?
Well, I mean, the first thing is making sure that we don't make those comparisons to the previous scores, just because when you change tests, any test, you know, you really can't make the comparisons. When we went from the norm reference test back in the 90s to the standards test, you know, we didn't want to make comparisons then either, and so we don't want to do that now. But it really is trying to give parents information so that they understand what the test scores mean and where we are at the process of implementation, so that this is the first year of the new test. And so really this is baseline information as far as test scores go. But what we're really trying to do is talk with parents about using the information that they do get from their test scores and really providing an opportunity to have a conversation with their teachers and principals about the score, so that they're seeing for the first time how their kids did on the new standards, but also looking back at how their kids were doing in their classroom work last year, how they did on the report cards, and really hoping that this is an opportunity to have another dialogue around Common Core and how their kids are doing with their teachers. So we are trying to provide that information. And then what we've been doing is sharing some information to schools and districts that we're hoping that they use to send to parents, that also includes different links to different information that they can dive deeper in and get a better understanding. So the PTA has some, the state PTA has some great information, great schools have some great information. So really trying to connect them to information where they can dive deeper, but ultimately thinking that this is a good opportunity to talk with their kids' teachers if they haven't already, and you know, maybe answer any questions that they have.
Thank you. So we've got Don. Welcome, Don. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah. So I'm a ninth grader at Lowell High School, and I took Algebra 1 my eighth grade year, honors class, and once I took the test, I didn't pass it, and I was placed back into Algebra 1. And right now, I'm just being forced to repeat a year of math. And as of right now, I pretty much already know it. So do you have any idea why that's so? Like, I already took the year of math. So if you're talking about, like, raising all the levels, shouldn't you be, keeping them high and, like, a level for a school that's already supposed to have high standards?
Thank you. Superintendent, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. So, Don, go Cardinals. We love the Lowell Cardinals. So a couple of things just for Don's edification and for our listeners as well. The algebra that was being taught is no longer the algebra that is being taught now. The old algebra was based on an old set of standards. So the content that was included in the old algebra classes is outdated. The new Common Core algebra not only includes algebra concepts, but there are geometry concepts, there are statistical concepts, there are inferential statistics that's included in the new curriculum. So it's a new Common Core algebra, which is much more rigorous. Now, you know, think about how many weeks we've been into the school year. Believe me, Don, it will get much more challenging for you. The other myth I think that is really important to dispel is there is no such thing as an honors algebra class in the San Francisco Unified School District. There never has been. the honors just meant that you went faster. It didn't mean that you went deeper. It didn't mean that you covered additional information that was not covered in the other regular algebra class. What we did know, though, was that if you looked at who was in the regular algebra classes and who was in the honors classes, you saw a vast difference in who the kids were. And it was no surprise that in one class you had kids that looked a certain way, in another class you had kids that looked another way. So let's just be honest with everybody that there was no such thing as an honors algebra class. But we heard from the community and we said, okay, students that have taken algebra in the eighth grade feel that they've mastered that content. So what we're going to do is we're going to give a validation exam based on the Common Core state standards, based on what students need to have mastered in an algebra, Common Core algebra class. So what we did is we went to the authors of the Common Core. We constructed a validation exam that was valid and reliable and opened it up to any ninth grader to take that validation exam. We had a low cut score, not a high cut score. We had a low cut score that we felt statistically gave us assurance that the student that made that cut score had mastered sufficient knowledge in that Common Core algebra class to be able to move on to a geometry class their freshman year. So students that took it had a fair shot at showing that they had mastered that information. Students that actually showed they had made that, had mastered that information, right now are in a geometry class. Students that did not demonstrate that knowledge are in a Common Core algebra class, which we think is incredibly important that they master that content knowledge. So again, we're in the midst of a shift to a new set of standards, a new set of expectations. And, you know, the question that Don asks is actually a very common question, and we appreciate that. But believe me, he will be so competitive with all other students in terms of how he goes through his math classes. He needs to keep pushing himself and keep pushing the teacher to help him push himself as well. And we want his parents to understand what is it that he's learning, what should they be looking for, what should they be asking for as he goes through this algebra class this year.
Thanks. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the recent test results under Common Core with Richard Carranza, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, Kim Towsley, a fourth grade teacher at Argonne Elementary School in San Francisco, and on the phone we have Deborah Brown, director of education policy at Children Now. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you're a parent, do you have any concerns about how Common Core is being implemented or with your child's test scores? If you're a teacher, how has your teaching changed as a result of Common Core? And do you believe that the test results will improve over time? Do you think school districts should be concerned with the low test scores? And if so, what do you think they should do to address them? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So I want to get back to the test results. So using these, Superintendent, how will that inform your rollout of Science Common Core, which I think is coming up?
Yeah, great question. So again, this is a baseline year. It's the first time that students have taken the CASP, right? Which is, you know, some people call it the Smarter Balanced. It really is the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, CASP. So as Kim mentioned, it was the first time. So there was a lot of things that we had to learn. How do students use the technology? How do we roll out the technology? What's the connectivity? Is the differentiation working and the adaptive nature of the assessments working? So this information is just but one piece of information that teachers and parents will be able to use to assess how their students are doing. And I want to emphasize it's just one but of many pieces of information that parents should look at. Obviously, for us, it's very important because we want to look at, okay, how are our students, since everybody in California was in the same place this year, how did our students in San Francisco do in comparison to other large urban school districts in California? And I want to be really clear. I am not satisfied, nor do I think any of our teachers are satisfied, that 48% of our students were proficient or exceeded standards in math. We're not satisfied. That's not okay. But when we look at how we did compared to the state average was 34%. So it tells us that we are on a pace to doing better than what the average of the state of California was doing, which is a good thing. It's something that we should be happy that we aren't drastically below that average. But it also tells us, as we start disaggregating the data, that we have a lot of work to do. Our African-American students, our Latino students, students with disabilities, although they also performed better than in some parts of the state, they have an achievement gap with other groups of students. So that, for us, looks like what do we do then to differentiate the instruction that's happening around math, around English language arts, but also around the next generation of science standards. So what parents should be asking when, and by the way, parents haven't received their students' reports yet. They're starting to come out now. Okay, so not all parents, some parents may have them, not all parents will have them. But as parents get those reports, they should bring them with them when they come to their parent-teacher conference nights and have a conversation with teachers about, okay, tell me what this means. How does this impact my particular student? What should I be doing to support you, teacher, in the classroom? What can I do to help you? Because those are the rich conversations that are going to get students in a much better place to be able to show mastery of the standards as we go forward.
Okay. We've got Ed on the line. Ed, welcome. Do you have a question or comment?
Richard and Deborah and I almost had her name. I almost remembered long enough.
Kim.
you stole my fire, Richard. I was complaining that the 48% was hardly something to crow about. Is that 48% of the nation national standards, or is that international standards?
No, that
I guess the test wasn't given internationally. So
correct. Yeah. So the 48 that I refer to is, it's 48% of San Francisco Unified students met or exceeded standards in mathematics. So that's compared to 34% of the state of California students.
Oh, but what's the national average?
Well, again, that's an apples to oranges comparison, because not everyone is, you know, the Common Core state standards. The standards are common.
Oh, they're state by state.
Correct, but different states are using different assessment protocols.
Well, you can't match them then.
Yes, sir.
But you know. Yeah, and the other thing was I listened to this to the school board thing and the appalling low rates of different cultures, African Americans. It's alarming, even though we're trying so hard. Do we have a chance with Proposition 13? Dried up money for us to get there? I mean, my God, our colleges are so good in California, and I'm involved in the UC system, and you don't see very many Californians up there in the graduate department. They're mostly from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a chance to do that with the Proposition 13 the way it is?
Well, that makes it very difficult, and you know, I've spoken to many of my colleagues that have spent their entire lives in California, and okay, they talk about life pre Prop 13 and post Prop 13, and
yes,
you know, I can tell you that there although it started to change, there is still an ideation in California that education spending, whether it's K-12 or higher education, is an expense. Whereas when you think about other industrialized nations, particularly nations that have performed better than the United States on some of these kinds of assessments, they see education, public education, as an investment, not an expense.
Exactly.
And I think that's the common ground that I think we're all trying to work towards, is saying, listen, we're not about lowering our standards. We've taken that step. We've upped the ante in terms of our expectations in the Common Core. But we also, if public education is truly public, then we don't have the ability to issue an IPO or to, you know, sell stocks. We are dependent upon what the government and the citizens invest in the public education system.
Thank you, Ed. We've got Anne on the line. She's a parent. Welcome, Anne. Anne, welcome. Do you have a question or comment for our guest? Okay, I think we've lost Anne. So, Superintendent, what steps is the district taking to close the achievement gap?
Well, we talk about the achievement gap when you look at the data, but we also talk about the opportunity gap. So we know that, for example, when you look at some of the student groups that have not performed traditionally well, and you look at, do they have access to technology in their homes? Do they have the ubiquitous access to devices and enrichment experiences? So as Kim was describing, students answer a question, not only are they answering the question for the content, but they're also describing the nature of the answer. So the context is important. And we know that, you know, if you've never been to, for example, if you've never been to Europe and you're asked to describe what does the Eiffel Tower look like in comparison to the Arc of Triumph, in comparison to whatever, if you've never been there, you're at a disadvantage to the student that has been there. So when we talk about enrichment, that's what we're talking about. It's the opportunity then to expose students to a rich array of experiences that they can then use as part of their schema, we call it in education. But it's really their background knowledge to be able to express these kinds of ideas in a way that is deep, meaningful, and descriptive. That's what we're really talking about in San Francisco when we're trying to create environments where Kim as a teacher has access to field trips. She'll have access to different kinds of technology that she can bring experiences into the classroom. She has the ability to use different kinds of demonstrations, for example, to give students that kind of schema. She can have an enrichment program at her school where students can have an after-school program, or they can have a summer learning and enrichment program that's not just drill and kill math and English language arts, but kids actually get to go places and see things and experience things. So that all is part of what we're trying to do to close the achievement gap and the opportunity gap. And I would be remiss if I didn't also mention that in San Francisco, we also are very cognizant of the fact that we do not want to be part of the narrowing of the curriculum. So we think that arts, we think that music, we think that dance is incredibly important for our students to have access to. That is really an equity issue, that if you start just drilling and killing, which was kind of what school districts did across the nation during No Child Left Behind, because that all-important math and English language arts score was so important, you're narrowing the curriculum, and I think you're not educating kids, you're training kids. We want to educate students, so we want to give them access to the arts, we want to give them access to science, hands-on science, and everything else that will help to enrich them.
We've got Richard on line one. Welcome, Richard. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, good evening. I want to thank you all for having this show, and especially a thanks goes out to Superintendent Carranza for advocating for public schools in San Francisco, and I really appreciate their looking to the future. And I just wanted to say I know that in addition to high-stakes testing, that the district does look at other factors to measure the success of schools, for example, with Mission High School. And I wonder if the superintendent could speak about there are many ways to look and evaluate the success of schools.
Richard, I appreciate the question. Absolutely. I mean, we had mentioned that, you know, test scores are just but one indicator of how students are doing. But we also know that it's equally important how we develop the socio-emotional learning of students. So, for example, we all know because we're adults that, you know, life is full of a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And the difference often between those that are able to succeed and persist are those individuals that learn how to have grit, how to have stick-to-itiveness, that when you're faced with an obstacle, you pick yourself up and you're able to find another way to accomplish your goal. We know that in schools, oftentimes, if students aren't given the opportunity to continue to try to meet the standard, that then students are told and given the message, if you don't get it right the first time, then don't even try again. So Mission High School is probably a phenomenal example of many examples we have in San Francisco's public schools, where the teachers at Mission High School have committed to something they call non-racist, non-biased teaching, and they've committed themselves to inclusive practices for all of their students. So what that means is that if you're a student and you turn in your assignment, and it's obvious that you've given it your best shot, but you just haven't made the mark, you don't take your F and walk away and say, okay, I failed it, I never have a chance. You're given another opportunity to take that assignment with the coaching of your teacher and the feedback of your teacher, revise your assignment, submit it again. If you're content with that, great. If not, you have an attempt to resubmit it. The point is that they're encouraging students to meet the standard, not to get it right the first time. And I can't even tell you how many times I would have failed had I been judged only by hitting it right the first time, especially in Little League Baseball, by the way. So yeah. I think that Mission High School, I'm so glad you mentioned it. That's a great example of how a school community, they were just written about, by the way, in a book, can take this idea of all students all the time and not lowering the bar. And they have some of the highest articulation rates to universities, colleges and universities of all of our high schools in San Francisco. So that's a great example to kind of talk about the other things that are important besides it's just the test score.
Thank you, Richard. We've got Sky on the line. Welcome, Sky. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, hi. I'm a guidance counselor at Creative Arts Charter School in San Francisco, which I believe is really achieving a lot of this goal currently. But it's really interesting seeing this get rolled out. And I'm curious, I was doing a workshop today with eighth grade students about what to prepare themselves for in high school. And I was curious if you have advice for them as they experience the rollout of Common Core, what they should prepare themselves for.
Thank you, Sky. Kim, do you want to respond?
I'm not as familiar with the high school standards as probably Superintendent Carranza is. I will say that one thing is, for example, if you look at the math, in addition to the standards, they have implemented practices. There are eight practices that run from kindergarten through 12th grade, also helping cement the continuity of what that is. And they are things like persevering in mathematics, making sense of problems, seeing patterns, things like that. If you go and look at some of those type of things, those are going to be important in their mathematics, but it's also going to translate. A lot of those translate into things with language arts as well as the new science standards. There's so much overlap in the standards that if you find a lot of the commonalities, that's also a good suggestion to help preparing them.
Yeah, Kim, you did a great job. I was also going to emphasize that these are mindsets that students should be prepared for. You can find them in all of the Common Core literature. It's kind of the preamble of what student mindset should be. I would really encourage you, Sky, to review those with students. And then quite simply, you know, a practice that we did with some sixth grade students was we asked students to describe for us in a paragraph what 2 + 2 - 3 equals. Now think about that. Everybody can probably do that math problem. But when you have to put pen to paper and you have to describe that as if somebody doesn't know what a number is and someone doesn't know what a math process is, that's exactly the kind of thinking and description that students will have to master.
That's City Visions for this evening. My guests this evening were Richard Carranza, superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, Kim Towsley, a teacher at Argonne Elementary School in San Francisco, and Deborah Brown, director of education policy at Children Now. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was Kevin Vance. Tonight's show was produced by Chris Nooney. We'll be off next week for Columbus Day, but we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we hope you'll join us then. This is Chris Hambrick. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.